Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Joe's, co-host Joe sitting in here for the show today. Why am I saying sitting in? Oh, I guess it's because I'm still in Al and Nathan show mode from when I guest hosted earlier. I'm about to refer to that actually later in this segment, but first, we want to thank the Main Street Beta Network for allowing the Silk or Joe Show to exist, and we are happy with them because they have managed to keep us on the airwaves despite some of their clients not agreeing with the content. In fact, despite some of their management not agreeing with the content of this program as well. So we want to thank them for that. We also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. Main Street Radio Network can be found at mainstreetradionetwork.com and also on social media, Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, Twitter at Main Street Radio, also on Wimkin at Main Street Radio Network. I guess. I'm not sure how to get to it from on Wimkin. And I guess you gotta join and look it up, though, from what I've been able to determine. Anyway, the Silk or Joe Show has some social media of its own. We are on Getter, GETTR.com at Silk or Joe Show. So you can check us out there, find out what I'm guest hosting for Alan. And if you want to find out more about the Alan Nathan Show, you can go to MainStreetRadioNetwork.com or AlanNathan.com or on Twitter at AlanNathan. All perfectly fine ways to find out about the show, especially when I guest host and kind of screw up the details on various events that happen or are breaking during the show, as it happened earlier this week. And that's what I want to get into. A slight correction, major correction, in fact. My faith in the corruption of our justice system was so great that I did a whole 2 hours on the premise that Hunter Biden's plea deal, his sweetheart plea deal, would stand. No, it didn't. He decided to plead not guilty instead, so good luck with that, because they have a lot of evidence against him. But, yeah, that was a big mistake on my part, because, well, here's the details all around it. First of all, the plea deal itself was just so simplistic, you know, compared to what he should have been facing. All this tax fraud that he committed was boiled down to a misdemeanor or two, and then his gun charges were all boiled down to... basically, he stays clean for a while and the gun charges go away. That's a sweetheart deal that a lot of people do not get. He should have been happy with that, but he wasn't, because there was a clause in there that said he was not immune from further prosecutions, and that was the deal breaker. So I guess they figured that they can, it's okay if he goes to prison for the tax crimes and the gun charges and stuff, because whatever's coming down the pike is going to be a lot worse if they don't get rid of these charges now. So, and we'll see how this plays out. But, you know, another thing that contributed to it, aside from the nature of the plea deal, which originally actually did include that clause about no immunity from, about having immunity from further prosecution, the judge apparently said, "This is crazy, we're not doing this," rightly so. And that is what nixed the deal right there, when the judge said, no, this can't be part of it, and was wondering what the heck the Department of Justice was doing with that clause in there. And on top of that, I mentioned on the Alan Nathan Show just how there's like two people on the prosecution team or involved with the prosecution team who are related to the Biden family in some way. One of them was Hunter Biden's best friend, apparently, said, "I love you, bro." And then another one was, well, I might be hyperbolizing by saying best friend, but very close. And the other one was a lawyer for Joe Biden. Well, actually was a friend of Joe Biden's lawyer when he was vice president. So there's a lot of stuff that's tied in here. In fact, one of them was the one who, the friend of Joe Biden's lawyer was the one who nixed the idea that the prosecutors go after certain, could actually go after Joe Biden when investigating the case. Why did I say prosecutors? When the investigator is investigating the case. Anyway, so deal is squashed, but another thing too that made me think that this would play out the way it didn't was the day before, Hunter Biden's lawyers pretended to be Republicans and called the court clerk and said, "Hey, could we retract this evidence that the Republicans submitted?" In fact, they said that, allegedly, mind you, the lawyers called up the county clerk or the court clerk and said, "Hey, we're with the Republicans, and we're with the guys who submitted this piece of evidence, the IRS whistleblower testimony. We want this stricken from the record. It was a mistake to submit it. Can you strike it for us? They had no authority to do that. They had to lie to the court clerk to get that done. And luckily it did not succeed. But then, you know, the next day they deny doing anything like that. Oh, it was just a misunderstanding. Yeah, BS on that. But, you know, it hadn't been determined one way or another. And these are lawyers, so you got to tap dance around and say allegedly on this one. But I'm saying allegedly with a big wink that you can't see because this is radio. Anyway, but with those shenanigans the day before, you know, and the plea deal still apparently going through right up until the morning of, you can understand why I thought that maybe this corruption would stand, right? And why the plea deal would stand, and why even though they had a bit of a tiff over it in the courtroom, they would get their tempers cooled and then come back and renegotiate the plea deal and get a sweetheart deal for Hunter Biden. Apparently that didn't happen, because they actually got a good judge. The prosecutors, though, I bet every criminal in prison right now wishes they had prosecutors like that, willing to forget different charges, willing to drop charges, willing to give immunity from future charges. Wow. You want to talk about privileged? You know, the left likes to say, oh, the Republicans and white people, they have all this privilege. Now, I don't have that privilege that Hunter Biden has. Are you kidding? And he's one of yours. What the heck are you guys doing supporting this guy and his white privilege? Come on. You think that if they were Democrats, and if these Democrats actually stood for what they say they stand for with fighting white privilege, Hunter Biden would be behind bars. And there would have been no plea deals and no bail, no nothing. But that didn't happen. Instead, he's out wandering around now loose, but he had the chance for that sweetheart deal, and the prosecutors gave it to him. If it weren't for the judge, they had a Democrat judge, then he would have taken that deal, and he'd be back out on the street with charges significantly reduced from what they should have been. Again, as I've said plenty of times, if I committed tax fraud on the level he did, I'd be in prison. IRS would have shown up with one of their SWAT teams and yanked me out of my chair. And certainly, if I committed any of the gun crimes that he did, I wouldn't be able to buy a gun for the rest of my life, assuming I had much of a life after the 5-10 years of prison term that I'd have served. So that's how it will look for the rest of us. And then the drug crimes too, the very obvious drug crimes that he committed that they just seem to have forgotten about entirely in this prosecution. You know, if I committed any of that stuff, I'd be in prison. No question about it. If I got a plea deal, it would be to plead from 5 years down to 1 year. That was it. I'd still have felonies on my record and I wouldn't be able to buy firearms again. But Hunter Biden? No, the deal he had, he would have been able to buy firearms again, despite committing several felonies with them. Misuse of fire, or improper disposal of a firearm, as well as using drugs while owning a firearm. Both of those are felonies. But alas, Hunter Biden just almost got away with that, if it weren't for that pesky judge. So, really pays to have the last name of Biden, and I'm pretty sure most other judges, especially if they were appointed by Obama or Clinton, they would have let that deal go through, immunity from future prosecutions. But speaking of that little aspect, interesting detail that was revealed during the trial was that, yes, there are ongoing cases against Hunter Biden, and that is part of what motivated the judge to remove that little bit of the plea deal, because what's the point of having ongoing cases against Hunter Biden if he's immune from those cases? Total waste of taxpayer money if that was happening. So, much congratulations to the judge in this case for taking these steps. I hope she lives to see the day that this case goes on, because, you know, we've had suspicious deaths lately. You know, for example, the Obamas, their longtime chef, he drowned, but he knew how to swim is the problem with that. He was out kayaking and somehow managed to get himself drowned, and he's not the first White House chef to do that, mind you. The White House chef for the Clintons met the same fate in 2015, right before Hillary started running. Now, isn't that interesting? This is 2023, right before maybe one of the Obamas is going to run. discuss that a little bit on the Al Nathan Show too. Michelle Obama might be looking at a 2024 term, and in which case, the drowning of our private chef takes on a more sinister meaning. But boy, I wonder what Joe Biden's chef is thinking right now. Probably quaking in his boots. For that matter, I wonder what people with dirt on Hunter Biden are thinking, you know? Because if this is what it looks like, then maybe that judge and maybe anyone with dirt on Hunter Biden is going to be not seeing the world for much longer. But we'll see about that. I think they should all issue statements that they know how to swim and that they are not suicidal. Certainly not to the degree of suicidal that Vince Foster was, where they found him in the middle of a muddy field with clean shoes somehow and a gun consisting of parts of different guns. Allegedly, mind you, allegedly. And, of course, Vince Foster had dirt on the Clintons, so, and was covered in dirt except for his shoes, somehow. I guess he levitated his way out to the middle of that field. Anyway, folks, I'm going to levitate on to the next segment right on through these commercials, so stick around with us for more Silker Joe Show.
Recent news reports are raising the alarm about illegal, disposable vapes in kid-enticing flavors that are pouring in from China. Here's Fentanyl Fathers co-founder Greg Swan.
I lost my firstborn son, Drew, to an overdose, a tragedy no parent should experience. The FDA has started taking action against illegal, disposable vapes that could contain deadly fentanyl. Now, they need to get every one of these out of our communities.
Sponsored by Fentanyl Fathers.
Jorge Gaviria is the founder and owner of Masienda, a supplier of high-quality masa products. Masienda's mission is to carry on the tradition of one of the world's most important crops and empower chefs and home cooks to make the best masa-based dishes in their own kitchens. Jorge can now be seen in a new Capital One business commercial, highlighting how his Spark Cash Plus card helped him grow the business. Jorge Gaviria.
With a Capital One Spark Cash Plus card's unlimited 2% cash back, I invest in research and development for new products that help us grow. It even helped me create and publish a best-selling Masa cookbook, providing a guide to using Masa at home.
Capital One's Spark Cash Plus card enables small businesses to earn unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases. And with no preset spending limit, Spark Cash Plus cardholders have more flexibility with purchasing power that adapts to their needs based on spend, payments, credit profile, and other factors. For more, visit CapitalOne.com.
Spring is here. Time to get out of the gym and take your workout outdoors. Whether you're walking, running, swimming, or biking, it's important to have a proper warm-up routine to prevent injuries. Five-time Ironman triathlon world champion Craig Crowe-Alexander has some advice.
Sprains, strains, and injuries can happen to any athlete. Even a minor injury can affect your performance and derail your fitness routine. One of the best ways to try and prevent injuries is to make sure you prepare properly.
Alexander recommends always starting with a 10 to 15 minute dynamic warm-up.
Activation exercises combined with some dynamic movements like lunges are great for warming up. Focus on one specific movement at a time until you feel ready to go. Be sure to listen to your body and use proper support gear when needed to protect yourself and prevent injury.
The Curad Performance Series Ironman lineup includes rugged supports, wraps, kinesiology tape, bandages, and analgesics to support you on your fitness journey. For more, go to Curad.com.
Moms know it's the little things that matter most. A kiss for skinned knees, a hug for hurt feelings, and the small acts that keep families healthy. Many moms before me have seen serious diseases claim the health and lives of their families. Mine was affected by polio. Today, vaccinations for polio and many other diseases can help protect adults and children, generation after generation, mom after mom. Learn more about how to help keep your family healthy at vaccines.com.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give him a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve, it's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. So, tying in for the last segment, in fact, with the Obamas, Barack Obama, he recently tweeted that LGBTQ books shaped his life. That's an interesting idea, because he was opposed to gay marriage right up until sometime in the middle of his presidency. So, didn't do much to shape his life, apparently. In fact, Alan Nathan hosted the Alan Nathan Show, which, you know, I've guest hosted for, and I mentioned in the last segment as well as being part of our parent company, the Main Street Radio Network. He was pro-gay marriage before Obama finally came out as gay, pro-gay marriage, so... Interesting how that works out. Joining us now to talk about this and Obama's clear lie and pandering to the LGBTQ community, we have George Carneal. He is a frequent speaker at church conferences and has appeared on outlets such as the Christian Television Network, Janet Medford Live, and WorldNet Daily. He is author of From Queer to Christ, My Journey into the Light. George, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
So what do you make of Obama's storied history with this? Because now, allegedly, he was for gay marriage, then dropped that pretense for his Senate career and to win the presidency, then gained it back. Suddenly, while he was president, became for gay rights again. But it's an interesting that he would say this sort of thing shaped his life, you know, especially considering the dearth of LGBTQ books when he was growing up, because people have to remember how old this man is. He was going to college in the early 90s.
I'm glad you actually brought that up, because I remember seeing him do the interview stating that marriage was between a man and a woman, and then suddenly he evolved when it was time for him to run for president and he needed the gay dollars and the gay votes. It shows you what a two-faced rat he really is, and we shouldn't be surprised by anything this fraud of a president says or does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was talking with someone earlier this week about how I got to do the plug on the Al Nathan Show again on Wednesday, how the Obama family just seems to be doing that. Like Michelle Obama, for example, she did a lot to hurt the black community and to profit off of their misery during her rise to power. Or her rise to prominence, I should say. So they really are not above taking their supporters, throwing them under the bus and telling them, hey, enjoy the view from down there. We gave you a gift.
Yeah, the Obamas are out for the Obamas, just like the Clintons. They care about no one but themselves. And at some point, you would think that liberals in general who support these idiots would just wake up and realize they are being played for fools.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem to be the case, though. In fact, they Michelle Obama in particular is consistently polled as super popular, and Barack Obama is always doing great in the polls as well whenever it happens to come out. So it seems that a lot of people across the country just are really either don't know or don't care about the deception that they play.
Well, it could be, too, that remember, the polling is usually done by liberal media, and they're going to make sure that it always goes in their favor. So I would ask the American people not to put too much stock in these so-called polls.
Mm-hmm. Well, even if the polls do go in their favor, they still have to find a lot of Democrats out there that favor them. And you got to think that the Democrats now would be tired of having corrupt, crooked candidates with all the stuff going on with Joe Biden. They can't believe that everything is all smoke and mirrors from the GOP, can they?
Well, you would think that every time a scandal comes up, especially when Hillary Clinton's name is somehow always attached to it, they still defend her to the end. But yet, you know, if Trump, you know, calls someone a name, you know, they want to just go after him. And it's just interesting, when Hillary and Obama both stated on camera that marriage is between a man and a woman, when they changed it, they said they merely evolved. And then the gay community just eats that up, and then they buy that garbage and they fully support them. It's just interesting that Trump is never allowed to make mistakes or evolve, but when it comes to a Democratic candidate, a lot of grace is extended to them.
Oh, yeah. Joe Biden, same thing. He was on camera, 2006 on ABC News, I think it was, saying, oh, marriage is between a man and a woman, so taking that sort of thing up in the Senate is just a distraction. It's been settled. And now, you know, he comes out, you know, he spends all of Pride Month saying he's a friend of the gay community. That's some friend right there.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, why they pander to this community. Especially, I don't know if you or if a lot of the American people understand that there are a lot of fair-minded gays and lesbians who are awake, they are aware of what's going on, and they are defecting the Democratic Party. They are Trump supporters or just moving to the conservative side. They have really tired of this agenda and this movement, but I think that it's the agenda behind the agenda as to why these politicians continue to pander to this community, because at the end of the day, we know it's to destroy the American family and to just completely pervert and twist the minds of these children and destroy the lives of these people and ultimately bring America down.
Mm-hmm. Because they see this as a source of power. If they, first of all, they see the gay community as just being strict Democrats, so of course they want to increase that presence in the society as much as possible, because that means more Democrat voters. But on top of that, if they destroy families and supplement the absent families and absent structure with government and government programs, government money, well, the Democrats are the ones who stand for expanding the government. So, of course, if they're the new government, they're the new father and mother in your life, of course you're going to support them.
Yes, and Hillary's notorious for making statements like that. I mean, these globalists or these Democrat politicians and some of the Rhino Republicans really believe that they know what's best for the American people, and we should just acquiesce and turn our power over to them, and they tell us how to lead our lives, that the children really belong to them. It's just utter and complete arrogance on the part of these politicians.
Mm-hmm. Is it arrogance so much as a drive lust for power, though? Because maybe they don't really know or care if they can manage your life better than you. They just want to be able to do it.
Exactly. And it's just interesting that even with the recent drowning of the personal chef of Obama at his house, who was known to be a great swimmer, they were saying that he was allegedly revealing inside information linking Obama to Pizzagate and child sex crimes. So there's so many scandals involved with these Democrats, but yet they just blindly overlook them. And I don't know why anybody gives credence to anything that Obama has to say.
Yeah, he just had such a good PR team, such a good public relations aspect to him. In fact, yeah, I was talking with someone who kind of worked with people in the Obama administration a few weeks ago. And, you know, he outright said that was Obama's main focus. He didn't really care about day-to-day management of anything. He just wanted to do all the PR hits and really make a good public image and didn't really actually care about running the country. He just wanted to look good.
Yeah. Well, I really loved when his half-brother Malik came out and tweeted that Obama is definitely gay and really went on to expose Obama for who he is and just his arrogance. And it just really says a lot about who that man is. If people would just do their research, they would see that he really is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Mm-hmm. An absolute narcissist wolf with finely combed fur.
Exactly. But what can you say?
Mm. Yeah, it's rather discouraging when it comes to politics, though, that people who are just so shallow and so callous and so duplicitous, you know, it's reverse themselves publicly so many times, and people just take their word for it, whatever their latest position is.
Yeah, and I think that's what saddens me about the LGBT community, because even when I was in that lifestyle, and I know the mindset of that community, if a person comes out and they actually stated they wanted to destroy this country and enslave humanity, but they supported gay rights and would promote transgender surgeries and the government pay for it, all they would hear is that the candidate supports.
This Men's Health Month, we encourage men to take care of their largest organ, their skin. Plaque psoriasis is a common skin disease that may appear as raised and scaling red plaques anywhere on the body, like the knees and elbows, and even private and sensitive areas like the groin, genitals, between the buttocks and armpits. Symptoms can include pain, cracking skin, and itching. While it occurs equally among men and women, several studies have shown that men tend to have more severe plaque psoriasis. Chad Cragen was diagnosed nearly 20 years ago with plaque psoriasis, affecting multiple areas of his body, including his elbows, knees, and between his buttocks. Chad is sharing his story to encourage other men to talk to their healthcare provider about their symptoms and learn about a steroid-free treatment option that may be able to help.
When I was first diagnosed, I walked out of my dermatologist's office with 5 different tubes and bottles of topical medicine to use on different parts of my body. Managing so many treatments, all with different instructions for different body parts, made my treatment routine confusing and time-consuming. Recently, I started using a steroid-free cream, Zoryve, Reflumilast cream, that has simplified the management of my psoriasis, as I can use it anywhere on my body. I apply it once daily for my flare-ups, and it's really helped manage my symptoms by clearing my skin and reduce my pain and itch too. I also like the cream because it's not greasy or messy. It spreads easily, and I just need to apply a small amount to the area of my body where there are plaques. I think a lot of men with plaque psoriasis, especially if they have it in more private areas, may not bring it up with their healthcare provider. I encourage them to go talk to their provider and learn about the latest treatment options. And don't be afraid to have your healthcare provider examine your full body, because psoriasis may look and feel different depending on location. With the appropriate treatment regimen, things can change.
Zoryve is a prescription medicine used on the skin, topical, including in areas with skin folds to treat plaque psoriasis in people 12 years of age and older. It is not known if Zoryve is safe and effective in children under 12 years of age. Before taking Zoryve, tell your healthcare provider if you have liver problems and about the medicines you take. Do not use Zoryve in or on your eyes, mouth, or vagina. Tell your healthcare provider if you are pregnant, breastfeeding, or plan to be. It is not known if Zoryve will harm your unborn baby. The most common side effects of Zoryve are diarrhea, headache, trouble sleeping, nausea, application site pain, upper respiratory tract infections, and urinary tract infections. These are not all of the possible side effects of Zoryve. Talk to your healthcare provider to find out if Zoryve is right for you. For more information about plaque psoriasis and Zoryve, a steroid-free topical that works across affected body areas, talk to your healthcare provider or visit www.zoryve.com. That's Zoryve.com. Sponsored by Arcutis Biotherapeutics.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between, it really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Al and Nathan Show, everybody. So, God, why did I say Al and Nathan Show? It's the Silker Show. I know why I said it. Alan had been discussing this topic earlier this week, and I had that in my mind when I was about to introduce this, when I was about to get into this topic here. But it's the Silker Joe Show, folks, not the Alan Nathan Show. Anyway, so the topic which Alan covered earlier this week was about how Vice President Kamala Harris, she came out saying, oh, the Republicans in Florida, they're promoting slavery now with their new school curriculum. Now, that was an utterly false statement. But she said it anyway. In fact, Democrats all over are echoing that point. without actually having looked at the curriculum. I mean, there was a CNN interview where this idiot talking head with who looked kind of drugged, if you asked me, had like such fawning praise for her. You'd think that she had just joined a cult or something, the cult of Kamala. Such fawning praise over Kamala Harris's strong statement against DeSantis, but it was all a lie, because Florida's curriculum doesn't promote slavery. It has exactly one sentence that reads, quote, "Instruction includes how slaves developed skills which, in some instances, could be applied for their personal benefit." So, okay, technically that is correct. And if we're going to have an honest conversation about slavery, we should mention such things, mind you, unless you just want an entirely one-sided lecture on it, as opposed to an open dialogue like they keep claiming they want. But the curriculum doesn't hold back in condemning slavery. It, not at all. It makes it very clear that it's an anti-slavery curriculum. But obviously Democrats didn't read it, they just read that one sentence. But here's the catch. The predecessor to it, the stuff that Democrats say is okay and acceptable, had similar language in it. So why are they condemning this except just to attack DeSantis? And apparently it's working, because this was a total lie. I saw it repeated by ABC News earlier this week as well. Kamala Harris repeats it. Democrats are repeating it. It's absolute garbage. But just keep it up, because people believe them, like we were talking about in the last segment. Doesn't matter how many times they're called out for being wrong, caught lying, people still trust them. Anyway, it is, though, technically an accurate statement. There were skills which could be applied for their benefits. Again, the curriculum that this stuff that DeSantis replaced with said the same thing. The stuff the Democrats said was better said the same thing. And it's not a pro-slavery statement, not at all. It's just saying this happened. And it's couched inside a lot of anti-slavery statements. You know, it's like just a deliberate misinterpretation of the situation, like they did with Donald Trump back when he gave that speech after the Charlottesville riots, you know, where he said, I'm not talking about white supremacists here, but there were good people. And again, I'm not talking about the white supremacists. Actually, he said neo-Nazis. He said there were very fine people in the crowd, and I'm not talking about neo-Nazis. He said that in the speech. That's not what Democrats heard, though. They didn't hear him twice say that he wasn't talking about the neo-Nazis. They just heard very fine people and said he was talking about neo-Nazis. They still say to this day. They still lie about that. So why is it, if your opponent is someone so bad, why do you have to consistently lie about what they do? In fact, why do you have to lie about your own position? So, because according to Democrats, if this mentioning this line about slaves developing skills which possibly could be applied to their benefit, if that is so racist and it means that they support slavery, then Democrats themselves support slavery, which is nothing new. That's their position from 200 years ago. Actually, that's their position from 100 years ago. So, just the lack of awareness on their own hypocrisy, and the people that vote for them just don't seem to have a capacity to question any of this, or just go right along with it. And I'll tell you what, there's another thing that they didn't object to in that Florida curriculum, and that is the idea that there was violence against white people by blacks. And again, if you wanted a neutral conversation, you'd mention that. They don't. They say this is bringing politics into the classroom. Really? Giving both sides of the story, but still heavily biased against racism and slavery, is bringing politics into the classroom, as opposed to just condemning all white people as racists forever and ever, amen. That's not bringing politics into the classroom. Bringing racial hatred into the classroom is not bringing politics into the classroom. Yeah, right. The Democrat Party platform is somehow anti-white hatred, even though their leaders are all old white people, which is kind of weird how they managed to get away with that, but they do. I guess it's the same mental sleights of hand that their audience commits when they see Democrats like Kamala Harris condemning Florida for just teaching what's already being taught just about, and calling it racist that they're teaching what's already being taught. So the same mental gymnastics they do for that allows them to understand that they can hate white people, but white people are leading the party and telling them to do all this. I guess that's why I'm not a Democrat. I'm my head's hurting right now just trying to describe to you what their positions are. That's why I sound so staccato and stuttered right now, because I'm trying to process this, like, you know, as I'm talking in the back of my head, it's going, wait, is this really what they believe? That can't be right. There's no, it's not making logical sense. Did I relate this story correctly? But yes, I have. The self-doubt is because of how insane their belief system is. But the idea that this bringing of truth into the classroom after years of Democrats hiding and whitewashing history is bringing politics into the classroom, I guess that just means that to a Democrat, the truth is politically dangerous. And, you know, they also cite the NAACP condemning this curriculum, the media stories do. NAACP is nothing these days. Gee whiz, they were bribed by Coca-Cola 10 years ago to say reducing sugar in your diet is racist. Remember when New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio was talking about banning the big soda containers or whatever? As if there wouldn't suddenly become a black market for such things if he did. But during that period of time, Coca-Cola decided to... And there was also talk about making it so that soda was not covered by food stamps. And I can see the rationale for that. We're talking about communities that are living possibly in food deserts, that is, places without access easily to fresh and healthy foods. And when it was proposed, hey, let's make sure they can't pay for their sodas and unhealthy stuff like that with food stamps so that they can, you know, not take the easy way out and actually have money available for a steady, stable, healthy diet, they were called racist for that by the NAACP. Because Coca-Cola bribed them too. So if you're for sale like that, as an organization, willing to actually say the opposite of what's true, then really you've lost all credibility, because basically the NAACP encouraged diabetes in the African-American community. And already it's a community plagued with health problems. In fact, right now, it's interesting, the body mass index, they say that that's a racist white concept of how much fat you're supposed to have on yourself. So change it so that, I don't know, being 300 pounds and 5'2" is considered healthy if you're black. But that isn't, though. That's not the truth. That's not at all healthy. It's very unhealthy. And for decades, African Americans have been suffering from severe health conditions related to obesity and related to unhealthy lifestyles. But what's the Democrat approach? Call you racist if you disapprove of unhealthy lifestyles. Call you racist if you point out this is not a healthy situation. So they are trying to kill the black community, I guess, by giving them bad health advice. You can't really get much more racist than that, and the NAACP is on board with this. And apparently so are Democrats. Actually, in Los Angeles, they took a proactive move in this direction. In a heavily minority school system out there, what they did was they brought in some health experts, consultants or whatever, actually some doctor that worked for a potato chip company, to create this health curriculum that said there's no such thing as junk food. All food is good for you. Donuts, potato chips, candy, all that is good for you and in any quantity you care to ingest. And you're a bigot if you disagree. And they ran with it. Democrats in the Los Angeles school system implemented that curriculum to the detriment of the people the kids that are learning in their system. And we're talking about people, again, in food deserts. They're not really getting access to the healthy foods. Now they're just being told it doesn't matter that you don't have healthy food. Just eat this processed crap that's full of fat and sugar, and you'll be okay, and it's bigoted to say anything else. Yeah, hide your own failures by claiming bigotry, and kill the people in the communities that you want to serve. And apparently this works. Apparently this gets them votes somehow. I was just, again, we were talking about in the last segment, how blinded can you be by ideology to just outright tell people being fat and stuffing down sugar is healthy, normal, and natural? It's not. It is decidedly the opposite, and it leads to shorter lifespans, many more health problems, but you're not allowed to say it. And even before they added race, they were already trying to say you're bigoted if you think that fat people should be dieting and exercising and are unhealthy and have unhealthy bodies. There was already this pro-fat movement among the Democrats, among the left. And now they've added race as a component to it as well. What, do they all just want us to be 300 pounds nothing, consuming whatever corporations slop in front of us? Man, which party is fascist here? Folks, more Hal and Nathan show coming, or more Silker Joe show coming up after this break. Again, I made a mistake because of how I opened the show with a topic from the Hal and Nathan show. That's what happens when you have a lot of crossover.
Rockstar Energy is jumpstarting the summer you want with the energy you need, giving away $50,000 to fuel your Memorial Day weekend. Millions of Americans are eager to kick off the holiday weekend with a travel getaway. In fact, experts predict 82% of summer travel will be by car. And with high gas prices, 89% will be looking for travel rewards, which is why Rockstar Energy wants to help you save at the pump and stay energized to get to your next destination. Here's how it works. Throughout Memorial Day weekend, the first 1,000 people to stop by any gas station, buy three Rockstar Energy products, and fuel up on gas or electric charge will get up to $50 cash back. Text ENERGY to 81234 to find out more. The rewards don't stop there. All summer long, you can earn up to $5 cash back when you buy two Rockstar Energy products and fill up at any gas station. To find out more, text ROCKSTAR to 81234. Let Rockstar fuel your drive this summer. I'm Kendra Wright.
Together with One Knoxville SC, PetSafe is thrilled to collaborate and create fields of joy for players, pets, and families in the selection of the pro soccer team's inaugural official mascot. To make this experience truly extraordinary, PetSafe has partnered with Young Williams, one of the largest animal shelters in the country, to create their Unleash the Mascot program. This program will profile rescue dogs and allow fans to vote for their favorites. As we search for forever homes for all six dogs, one lucky pup will be chosen by fans to become the team's official mascot and will be placed in a loving forever home with a One Knox team member. Starting on July 18th, fans can actively participate in the mascot voting process by visiting at PetSafe Instagram channel to cast their vote before July 21st at noon Eastern Standard Time. With this program, PetSafe is also challenging other teams across the United States to transform their fields into spaces of joy by hosting pet adoptions and events that unleash joy for pets and their families. Sponsored by PetSafe.
Recent news reports are raising the alarm about illegal, disposable vapes in kid-enticing flavors that are pouring in from China. Here's Fentanyl Fathers co-founder Greg Swan.
I lost my firstborn son, Drew, to an overdose, a tragedy no parent should experience. The FDA has started taking action against illegal disposable vapes that could contain deadly fentanyl. Now, they need to get every one of these out of our communities.
Sponsored by Fentanyl Fathers.
What is dadication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dadication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Heart valve disease is more common than you or your doctor may think, especially as you get older. It's serious but treatable with the proper diagnosis. If you or a loved one are experiencing shortness of breath, fatigue, chest tightness or pressure, dizziness or fainting, talk to your doctor and ask for an echocardiogram to get diagnosed early and enjoy your best quality of life. Learn more at askforecho.com. That's ask4echo.com.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the Silk or Joe Show. We have, for the last 9 minutes, a guest with us, Dr. Jack Cashel. He is executive director for Engrams, writer, documentary producer, and a media consultant. His new book is Untenable, The True Story of White Ethnic Flight from America's Cities. Dr. Cashel, thank you for being on the show. How are you today?
No pleasure.
So this book, Untenable, The True Story of White Ethnic Flight from America's Cities, you know, people are going to hear that title, they're going to start thinking racism, because there has been unfairly, in my opinion, a stigma attached to the term white flight. Could you tell us about this?
Yeah, you know, there has been a stigma, and it's unfortunate, because based on the circumstances under which the people fled America's cities, whites fled, blacks fled, Asians fled, Hispanics fled, but only whites were shamed for leaving. And to make that stick, they lumped all the various ethnic groups, Italians, Irish, Germans, Poles, into white. And they made them all essentially, the media did this, made them all somewhat evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the idea that, oh, because someone not of your white race, and, you know, as you said, broadly define what race white race is, even though 100, 200 years ago, if you asked a white person, they would have said Germans, Poles, Italians were different races. Even Italians sometimes say they're different race anyway. But despite all that, they lumped all the whites together and said they only moved out because someone with a darker skin hue than them moved into their neighborhood. And they just said It was pure racism and had nothing to do with subsequent increases in crime or anything like that.
That's right. And let me just tell you how I got the title of this book. Most of the people who left my neighborhood when I did, and I grew up in Newark, New Jersey, which is sort of the poster child for urban dysfunction. Most of them turned Republican. One guy did not. And I asked him, you know, why is it that you and your widowed mother finally left our block? He was the last one to leave. And he said, Jack, it had become untenable. And I asked him what he meant by untenable. He said, well, when your mother's mugged for the second time, that's untenable. When your home is invaded for the second time, that's untenable. And I got the name of the book from him, and it's, you take his experience times a million, and you have the story of white ethnic flight. And it's and people have refused to learn the lessons of that era.
It's gone, seems to be the opposite way, because you have in cities right now, they're saying, well, if you're opposed to getting mugged and robbed, then you don't belong in the city anyway. That's just a part of city life, you know, same as getting stuck in traffic.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And, you know, I was speaking, which I saw you saw those videos yesterday, is a naked woman walking across the Bay Bridge in San Francisco shooting people. I mean, that's what city life has devolved down to now. And so we're looking at a second wave of white flight. This time, however, the people who are fleeing are the laptop class, the people, they're the opinion makers. So they're not calling themselves white flight. You know, they're just not even talking about what's happening. And the cities that are losing people are all the big woke cities, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco. Tampa's not losing people. Dallas isn't losing people. And as a result, they have to be quiet about what's going on because they're the ones. In the 60s and 70s, the people leaving were the white working classes or the other working classes. And so the people who were making the opinions at that time, the opinion makers, were quick and easy to stigmatize these people as racist. And they've been doing it for the 60 years since it started.
Hmm. And now that they're leaving, like you said, oh, that's okay. It's just a normal thing to do. The city is just, you know, I don't want to live there.
That's right.
Absolute hypocrisy on their parts. And I got to wonder, though, you know, why do they think they can get away with just sitting there promoting, hey, it's wrong if you do it, it's okay if I do it, and get used to being crime? It's like, it seems to be this elitism mentality that everyone else has to live in crime and it's okay for them, and you have to justify them living in it, but me, I'm going to do this justification from behind armed guards in the suburbs.
Yeah. Well, you know, fear is the big driver here, Joseph, and what's amazing about my book Untenable is that no one wrote this book before. I'm like the first person ever to interview the people who left and ask them why. In the book, I talk about this Princeton professor who wrote an award-winning book, White Flight, and then she writes an op-ed in the New York Times wondering whether it was economic insecurity or just pure racism that caused people to leave. And then at the end of the op-ed, she says, you know, it would make it a lot easier if these people had left accounts of why they left. And then she says, with incredible condescension, she goes, I don't even know if they know why they left. And I laughed out loud when I read that, because I had just interviewed 50 people who knew precisely why they left. Their conditions had become untenable. And even more surprising, the readers of the New York Times in the comments section blistered her. And they said, how could you possibly write a book about white flight and not mention crime or schools? And person after person described in great detail their own justifications for leaving. And it had to be eye-opening for this lady. Leah Boustan is her name.
Well, I doubt it was eye-opening, because if she wanted her eyes open, she would have done the research to begin with. She probably didn't even read the comments.
No, and that's why I wonder. Well, I wonder if she read the comments. And if she had, it would have been very dispiriting for her if she was to take them seriously. She won the award for best book on whatever, which made me wonder, who came in second that year, you know? You've never talked to any of these people? It's crazy.
I bet the second place was someone who said unicorns don't exist because of global warming. But, yeah, it's like it just seems to be they don't want to know what the real cause is. They don't actually want to talk with these people. They just want to make their own opinion and then, you know, just say, hey, these people are doing it because of reasons that I say, not because of the reasons they say. What they say, you know, effectively they're saying the reasons these people moved out doesn't actually matter. What matters is my own opinion on the topic, and that is how they are going to be judged, by my opinion, not by their reasons.
That's right. You, Joseph, you just described the last century of sociology. You know, it's coming up with a thesis and then forcing all the facts to fit it. And in this case, it's based around what I call 60s denialism. You know, I lived through the greatest social experiment in American history, and I and my friends and my family, we saw the consequences up close.
All right. So we have about 20 seconds left. Where can we get a copy of Untenable?
I would just say go to Amazon. It's the best way to get it, because that's where publishers keep score nowadays. So,
All right.
And Amazon.com, the book is Untenable. The true story of white ethnic flight from American cities. Joseph, thanks for the time.
All right. Well, thank you for being on. Dr. Jack Cashel, thank you. And listeners, go check it out. We are done with you for the day. But our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, and our social media, Getter, GETTR.com, at Silker Joe Show. So once you've gotten your copy of Untenable, check us out. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.